For 25 years, the FBI held 10 pages of secret files on John Lennon, classified on the grounds that exposure of their contents could threaten national security. Hundreds of other FBI documents on the former Beatle have long since been released, and this week the FBI finally made those final 10 pages public. John Wiener is a professor of history at the University of California, Irvine, and a John Lennon scholar. He sued the FBI in 1993 for access to these documents. He joins us now from a hotel room in New York City where he's on vacation. Thanks, John, for taking the time to join us today.
Great to be with you.
And so what, after all these time, is the explosive new information in these documents?
Well, everything we learn here is about Lennon in 1971, what Lennon was doing in London, and it was all perfectly public information and perfectly legal. It says that he was interviewed by an underground newspaper in London called the Red Mole, that he met a French leftist named Regis Debray, and that anti-war activists in London hoped that Lennon would contribute money to open a left-wing bookshop. None of this seems to be national security information.
And the justification all of these years was exposing these this information would, violate classification agreements made with the people who provided this information, foreign governments.
Yeah, their argument has been that this is national security information provided by a foreign government under an explicit promise of confidentiality. Even today, we're not allowed to know the name of the foreign government that provided the information, although since it's all about London in 1971, it seems obviously that it's Britain.
Mm-hmm. And why would any of this constitute a security threat?
Well, they look at this differently than most of the rest of us do. Britain has no Freedom of Information Act that applies to their MI5, which is the corresponding agency to our FBI. So they do not have any policy of releasing documents ever, and apparently our government felt obliged to honor their policy, even though the documents in this case aren't exactly about Osama bin Laden.
Mm-hmm. How did you get involved in this in the first place?
Well, back when Lennon was shot in December of 1980, I was a historian, a journalist, and a Lennon fan, and I wanted to write something about his engagement with the peace movement in the United States in 1972, when I knew that Nixon had tried to deport him.
Mm-hmm.
I filed a Freedom of Information request for whatever files there might be on John Lennon with the FBI. I wasn't sure there would be anything. I didn't really think it would take 25 years to get these documents.
And over all of that time, what have we learned? I mean, why did the FBI investigate John Lennon in the first place, and did they find out anything remarkable?
Well, there really aren't any secrets about John Lennon anywhere in these documents. I think what's always been at issue here, it's more an issue of government secrecy and freedom of information. The FBI, under four presidents, has claimed that they have the right to define what constitutes a national security secret. They don't seem to want the courts to tell them they're wrong about that, and they certainly don't want the ACLU telling them they're wrong about that. I've been represented by the ACLU since 1983. The Freedom of Information Act, however, says something different. That gives judges the power to order the FBI to release documents if they've been improperly classified. And apparently that's what they feared in this case.
The front page of the paper you may have gotten at your hotel room this morning, the New York Times, reports that as a new policy, all government documents that have been classified will be released after 25 years unless a specific government agency objects to something. Given your experience with the FBI in this case, do you think that's going to change anything?
The Clinton administration had an openness initiative back in the late 90s that was supposed to do the same thing. Bureaucracies like to keep secrets, whether it's a Republican president or a Democratic president. It's very hard to get information out of them, even innocuous information. And when it comes to information that they actually care about, I think it's going to continue to be a struggle.
You going to write a new book?
I would like to do a new edition of the book I did on this, because now there's a happy ending.
John Wiener, good luck.
Thank you very much.
John Wiener, a professor of history at the University of California, Irvine, and a scholar of John Lennon. He sued the FBI for access to the Lennon files. And when you come back, cameras and Congress. Every day, C-SPAN viewers can watch and listen to speeches from the floor of the House of Representatives. In this case, Congressman Phil Gingrey, a Republican from Georgia.
Please yield 3 minutes to the gentleman from Georgia, member of the Rules Committee, Mr. Gingrey.
The gentleman is recognized for 3 minutes.
Mr. Speaker, I rise today in support of the rule and this underlying bill.
And what we see is a fairly tight shot of a representative speaking directly into a camera whose lens never moves. What we don't see is anything else, whether other members of the House are riveted by his remarks or reading newspapers or even whether they're there. The cameras are not controlled by C-SPAN. Under the original agreement with the House leaders, the Speaker of the House is in charge of what viewers see, or, equally important, what we don't see. Last week, C-SPAN's chairman and CEO Brian Lamb sent a letter to Nancy Pelosi, the incoming Speaker of the House, appealing for the right to show reaction shots, to pan the chamber, to allow television viewers to see what any visitor to the House gallery can see. Brian Lamb joins us now from C-SPAN's headquarters here in Washington, D.C. And, Brian Lamb, always nice to talk to you.
How are you, Neil?
I'm well, thank you. I know you've tried this before with no luck. Do you expect a different outcome this time around?
Have no expectations at all. All we're doing is following Speaker-elect Nancy Pelosi's own words, in which she says the Democrats intend the most honest, most open, and most ethical Congress in history. We heard something of the same, not the exact words, when the Republicans came in 1995. And we didn't do very well then, so we thought we'd try again.
And what is it exactly that you would like your viewers to be able to see?
Well, the activities on the floor of the House and Senate are seen through cameras controlled and operated and owned by the House and the Senate. And in the House, for instance, the Speaker has the power to tell the cameras which way to go, what to shoot, what to turn the cameras toward. And they have a lot of very strict rules, which means that you don't really see what actually happens on the floor if you're watching C-SPAN at home when we are in the House of Representatives.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time, that's not a whole lot. I mean, during morning remarks, for example, there's hardly anybody there.
They're, and that's fine. Everybody that serious C-SPAN watchers know that. And it actually, I think, over the last 28 years has made some people who watch cynical, thinking that they're trying to cover up what they know is happening and that there are not many people there. And I don't think if people had it all explained to them, when we try to explain to them, they'd be all that mad that they aren't there. There's a lot of business that's done that each individual wants to do, and there's no reason why 534 others ought to sit around and listen to it.
Mm-hmm. And therefore, with an explanation, it kind of makes sense. Nevertheless, as you point out, without an explanation, it does sound like they're trying to cover up embarrassment.
Well, it's the operative word in Washington has been and always will be control, and this is an example of where they take it a step beyond what's needed. I mean, our cameras, Our C-SPAN-owned cameras are in all the hearing rooms. We control the shots. We show the room in a way that we want to show it rather than the way that Congress wants to show it. We've never had a problem, never a complaint in the last 28 years. And so we're saying give us a chance to do the same thing in the House and Senate. At the moment, we're just asking for the House, and we'll go from there if we get it to the Senate. And the idea being that we will show exactly what's happening without a great deal of embellishment, the same way we have in other venues around Washington for the last 28 years.
We're talking with Brian Lamb, the CEO and chairman of C-SPAN News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Brian Lamb, we mentioned that a lot of the time there's not a lot going on the floor, but sometimes there is great drama on the floor of the House of Representatives, or for that matter, the United States Senate, when people are meeting in little conclaves and the Speaker or the Majority Leader is running around twisting arms.
The last time we went through this, there were several meetings held, both with the Republicans and the Democrats. And at the time, the attitude on the part of the Democrats was not a whole lot different than the Republicans. There was a lot of talk in the beginning of our request in 1994-95 that people were interested in it. But then the longer they talked and the more caucuses they had, people like Tom DeLay stepped up and said, "We understand. We weren't in the room, but we were told," he said, "over my dead body, will we allow those cameras in the House of Representatives?" The other thing that happened, and I'll never forget this, was when one very important member of Congress suggested that what they would do was have a certain area roped off over at one side or the other of the House floor, and that we would agree in advance not to show what goes on in that area, and that's where they could make their deals. And, of course, we wouldn't do that.
And it's not just the votes. Excuse me. It's not just the cameras on the floor. You also asked for access, quick access to electronically recorded votes. And when we talk about votes, this is in terms of when you're listening to the House of Representatives. This is often what you hear.
Vote. The yeas are 228. The nays 196. The resolution is agreed to, and without objection, the motion to reconsider is laid upon the table.
And, of course, votes are the most dramatic element of a lot of the proceedings on the floor of the House of Representatives, Brian Lamb. And you can't report the votes as they're happening, even though if you're in the House gallery, you can see the votes as they're happening.
Not only can't we report them as it's happening, it's hours afterwards that we actually get our hands on the votes. And it seems to be a bit silly in this day and age when everything is instantaneous that we have to have a hiatus period where they won't give us the votes, and there's never really any good excuse for this.
Excuse me, Brian, are you there? And we seem to be having a technical problem with the connection up to C-SPAN headquarters up on Capitol Hill. We'll try to check it out as we go along. And Brian? And so clearly we're having a problem. In any case, let's see if we can get a caller on the line. This is Rick, and Rick's calling us from San Francisco.
Hi there. Well, first off, even though Brian's not there, C-SPAN is a wonderful thing. It's especially great during election season. I had occasion a couple times to visit the Capitol and see the House in session. And the room that I'd love to see a camera are the reception rooms on the sides of the chamber, where you see the members meeting with the various people who come in to peddle their influence and so on. And a camera there, even without sound, would probably be incredibly revealing, even more so than what happens on the floor.
Mm-hmm. Let's see if Brian Lamb has been able to rejoin us. Brian, no, he's not there. The reason, of course, the reception area is just outside the floor of the House of Representatives and the floor of the United States Senate, for that example, are those areas where activity occurs. Is, of course, you need special passes to get onto the floor itself. And, Rick, as you suggest, most lobbyists don't have that kind of access.
That is correct. But when I was there, I noticed from looking at the faces that this was where much of the real business of the country got done, and nobody had any idea that it was happening.
All right. Rick, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
And we thank Brian Lamb. We apologize for our technical difficulties. Brian, excuse me, Brian, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me, Neil?
Yes, we can. All right. We just have about 30 seconds left with you. I don't know if you had a chance to hear that call from Rick in San Francisco, who said what he'd like to see is cameras have access to the reception areas where the lobbyists do a lot of their work.
Well, it makes a lot of sense, and we know that'll never happen. But, you know, it's going to be very important to watch the first couple of weeks of the House and what they do, because this is an issue they promised to deal with and clean up some of the problems that they had over the last 12 years, and we'll see if they can do it or not.
Brian Lamb, thanks very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Neil, very much.
And again, we apologize for our technical problems. Brian Lamb is chairman and CEO of C-SPAN. He joins us today from C-SPAN here in Washington, D.C. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.